You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Hide and seek is a hard-to-flush botnet. A phishing technique takes advantage of an email client's rendering of HTML. Facebook death threats in 2015 are said to have been the work of Fancy Bear, dressed up as the cyber caliphate. Nigeria's Yahoo boys are busier than ever. DHS wonders what it will take to get U.S. federal contractors to get rid of Kaspersky. Crooks turn from Tor to Telegram. We've got some Patch Tuesday notes. And Georgia's governor vetoes a controversial cybersecurity bill. From the CyberWire studios at Data Tribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, April 9th, 2018. There are some possibly unpleasant developments in the world of IoT botnets. Hitherto, you've been able to clear botnet malware from an IoT device by resetting the device. This works because most of the botnet software normally resides in memory, which a reboot flushes. This, however, may be changing. In what Bleeping Computer describes as a game changer, Bitdefender has described its discovery of the hide-and-seek botnet, an IoT botnet that survives device reboots. Under certain circumstances, hide-and-seek copies itself to a folder that houses daemon scripts in Linux-based operating systems, and routers and IoT devices tend to run on a Linux-based OS. Bitdefender thinks hide-and-seek is still something of a work in progress, and that large-scale distributed denial-of-service attacks are for now unlikely, but the new approach to achieving persistence in the bot herd will bear watching. Avanan reports finding BaseStriker, a phishing technique that crafts HTML in emails so the malicious links, even those on a blacklist, pass through the Safe Links feature of Microsoft Office 365's Advanced Threat Protection. It works by using the base tag to split the malicious link in two. Safe Links passes it, but then the Outlook email client reassembles the link into a nicely rendered and clickable form. The AP says it has evidence showing that 2015 threats communicated via Facebook to spouses of U.S. military personnel were not in fact from ISIS. The unusually repellent threats appear to have been the work of Fancy Bear, which is of course Russia's GRU. The threats, issued under the false flag of the cyber caliphate, would threaten military families. Here's a representative sample the AP offered. Quote, Dear Angela, Bloody Valentine's Day. We know everything about you, your husband, and your children. We're much closer than you can even imagine. End quote. The threats were, at the time, widely believed to be genuine ISIS communications. They're not the only time the GRU represented itself as ISIS. It did something similar during the hack of France's TV5 that same year. Those operations, arriving around the time of the ISIS-inspired massacre at Charlie Hebdo, were even more disturbing. We've had occasion recently to follow the doings of Nigeria's Yahoo boys and the gangs that employ them. They've been busy. Palo Alto Networks compared 2016 and 2017 and found a significant increase in the rate of cyber attacks by the Nigerian gang Palo Alto tracks as Silver Terrier. Silver Terrier made on average 17,600 attempts each month during 2017, up from 2016's average of 12,200. The gang's operations are socially engineered, so look to your user awareness training. It's become a standard part of just about every large data breach story these days. Countless usernames and passwords are revealed, which of course leads to recommendations from service providers or authorities to change your passwords. Philip Dunkelberger is president and CEO of Knock Knock Labs, and he also works with the FIDO Alliance, a group looking to bring standards-based authentication to the masses. He maintains that usernames and passwords have outlived their usefulness.
One, they were never designed for usability. They were really designed for quick local access. And access, if you think back, they were invented in the mainframe days. So terminal access and use, they were really not designed to be really usable. They had no idea of using something like a PC or, you know, even more troublesome, a tablet or a laptop, where you've got much less screen space and keyboard space. The complication that has come in trying to secure them, upper and lowercase, special characters, longer lengths, changing them all the time, doing essentially password rotation, has not worked well. The other piece is that from a security standpoint, you end up storing them in some kind of container or database that becomes a large attack surface that if I want to steal credentials, I can just attack that particular database and steal a lot of people's credentials. And what that has led to from a security standpoint, 81% of the people, according to the Verizon studies and echoed by Dr. Larry Poneman, who invented cost of a data breach, 81% plus of all data breaches begin with a stolen credential. So usability, not good for tablets and phones from a security standpoint, creates a big attack surface and is really not secure in a modern architecture today.
And so in your estimation, what's next?
What is next is the industry who created that particular modality, usernames and passwords and other types of inventions over time, has got to think about the problem differently. And the way we've been able to do that is think about things like, what would it mean to the world if we didn't have to use passwords anymore, if we could use a better, more natural way of logging in, something like a selfie or a fingerprint swipe or your voice? Those would be something that would be an improvement from a usability standpoint. And then could we separate the idea of storing large amounts of information or biometrics on a back-end database that could be attacked? So both of those ideas are something that the industry has been working on, and that has led us to the announcement this week of two standards bodies. One is a recommended standards body, the FIDOAlliance.org, and the W3C, which is an official standards body that governs a number of different standard protocols for the internet. The one that we'll talk about today is the browser protocol, and being able, two standards organizations with a lot of industry heavyweights in it, coming together to find a better way to do authentication.
So let's dig into that some. Take us through, what are you all hoping to achieve with the browser standards?
The browser standards that were announced was the coming together of the FIDO Alliance, which means Fast Identity Online, which has had over 300 plus companies involved in developing a protocol or a handshake, being able to replace common usernames and passwords or other non-scalable items like deploying hardware, you know, small tokens, those kind of things that are very costly to manage and replace replacing that with an infrastructure that basically turns secure elements on your device or on your laptop or on your phone, and common ways of using it, like a selfie or your voice or a fingerprint, all of those things being able to replace a username and password in a standard format that allows people to plug them together easily and build a better way of authentication.
And so what kind of a timeline do you suppose we're on in terms of making this an official standard?
Well, that's a great question. Standards usually take, I was involved, I was the CEO in a prior life of Pretty Good Privacy, PGP as it's well known in the industry. That standards body of making an encryption standard took us roughly 10 years. Because of the pressing problems that we have with the theft of credentials and the large attack surfaces that are out there, we've been able to get to this kind of recommended standard in less than 5 years. And I think that what we're going to see is the rollout beginning later this year with people like Google and Microsoft announcing at the most recent RSA conference that this will be available over the course of their product deliveries over the next year. So this is going to be available on a broad scale within a year. All of these are just component parts of the protocol that will let the technologists implement it and let the users, whether they're corporate users or consumer users, enjoy the benefit. And so we didn't dig the hole of usernames and passwords in you know, 5 years. We're not going to get out of this in a short period of time. But for the first time, we're building new roadways or thinking about the roadways differently than we have in the past to make usability and security something that's available to everybody.
That's Philip Dunkelberger from Knock Knock Labs. You can learn more about the FIDO Alliance and their authentication standards at FIDOalliance.org. Microsoft patched some 67 issues with its products yesterday. One of the vulnerabilities addressed merits particular attention, CVE-2881-74, which affects the way the Windows scripting engine handles certain classes of objects, is already being exploited in the wild. Adobe also patched, addressing issues in Flash Player and the Adobe Creative Suite. VPN Mentor is offering an unofficial fix for vulnerable Dassan GPON routers. If you can't wait for Dassan, give the offer a look, but a circumspect and a cautious one. Unofficial stuff can be good, but caveat emptor. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is wondering what it will take to get federal contractors to purge Kaspersky products from their systems. Secretary Nielsen is musing aloud and darkly about punitive contracting measures to bring the primes and subs into line. Feeling increasingly exposed and ill at ease on tour, it appears that the criminal underground is turning to Telegram when it feels the need for an online forum. Georgia Governor Nathan Deal has vetoed that state's ill-received State Bill 315, called catastrophically stupid in Boing Boing's headline assessment, which would have criminalized many common and legitimate security research practices. It also would have authorized certain forms of hacking back under the rubric of active defense. The hack-back provisions of the law were also greeted with widespread skepticism. A number of commentators thought the bill would not only have criminalized innocent white hats, but also inspired poorly informed and difficult to contain cyber vigilante activity. So there you go. Those checks and balances you learned about in high school civics class are alive and well in the Peach State. And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute. Joe, welcome back.
Hi, Dave.
So you sent over an interesting article. It was about the state of Delaware, who sort of dipping their toes in the water to have mobile driver's licenses.
Right.
What's going on here?
I'll tell you what I think, and this is just me doing what's probably the easiest part of my job, and that's going, this is going to be bad.
Go on.
So the mobile driver's license, two of the key features that the article talked about, one of them was the ability to identify yourself as over the age of 18 or over the age of 21 without having to disclose other information like your address and your name and everything, which is a good concept, a good idea. I like that idea.
I can get into, let's say I'm someone who wants to get into a bar.
Right.
I can use this ID with the bouncer at the door
without that bouncer finding out where I live.
Right. It just has a picture of you and says, yes, you're over 21.
I see.
And that's it.
Right.
And that's great. If there was a way to secure that to be the only way that, a picture of you could show up on your phone with the statement saying, yes, you're over 21, then that would be fine. However, my prediction is that there will be all kinds of apps released that will permit people to have essentially what amounts to a fake ID.
Right.
That, you know, here, just smile for this picture, and we'll put up the picture and say, yes, you're over 21 in this app.
And it's hard to put a hologram on an iPhone app.
It, right? Absolutely. It's, I don't know that it's possible to put a hologram on an iPhone app.
Well, but also there's some interesting uses from law enforcement to use this during a traffic stop. They talk about the officer could ping your smartphone and request the driver's license information before even walking up to your vehicle.
That's right. And that gives me concern, because my initial reaction or thought on this is, as soon as this comes out and becomes widely available, everybody who has a malicious intent will be trying to get into every single person's driver's license who has one of these apps on their phone.
Hmm.
It's basically a big sign that says, come hack me. Not that there's, I know of any vulnerabilities about on this system.
Right.
But it is certainly part of the attack surface that is going to garner a lot of attention.
Yeah, it's interesting, because so far, you know, the driver's license is something that we've kept off of our smart devices.
Right.
You have your license in your wallet, you know, all that information, your driver's license number.
Yep.
Generally, I don't have on my phone. So, you know, we talk about how all of this private information is on our phone. Well, this would push even more to your
mobile
device.
It would push more information that is not usually on your phone to your phone. And I just have a couple of concerns with this. I'd like to learn a little bit more about it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Hopefully, it'll be one of those things you can opt into. So for the folks who see the benefits of it, they could do it. But if you wanted an old-fashioned driver's license, you could still do that.
It's very easy to opt out. You just tell them that you don't have a smartphone.
Ah, and you hope nobody calls you while you're standing in line and telling them that, right?
And if it does ring, you just go, I don't know what's happening.
Right? What's that noise?
Right?
I hear that noise every now and then. I'm not sure what it is.
I'm about to back up.
That's right. Right. All right. Well, keep an eye on it. Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining
us. My pleasure, Dave.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.